339. I'll read you the whole first two paragraphs, starting with the whole. Not really the whole first two paragraphs, but the whole, the bottom of 339. The whole parable appears to depict a kind of apocatastasis. What's an apocatastasis? 339.
The last two words.
339, the last two words, the whole. Whole parable appears to depict a kind of apocatastasis. That was my question.
Some sort of like an opposite of apocalypse or something? Is it actually kind of fruition, something that's standing still?
No. I forget what the etymology of the word is. That's a good question. I can check on that. Apo is uncovering, I think. Is that right? Does anyone remember? And stasis is standing. So it's an uncovering of an original standing. I think that's its original meaning, but I'll have to check on that. Anyway, apocatastasis means
apple is being away from black.
Not there. I think it's translated generally as restoration. Yeah. I'm not sure that's what the origin of this word is. I'll check it. I'll have to be sure.
Easy for you,
so. But it's also biblical. I will check on that for you too. And I think it's translated as restoration. Restoration in the sense of becoming the original person you were. But here I think what she means is all this ground image it's an attempt to get back to the ground of the experience. To be realigned by understanding the fundamental nature of the experience. Might be another way to put it.
Realigning, you say?
Well, restore, realigned. In our language, it would be when the ego is realigned to the self. And actually, I think it is an image in the Book of Revelation, where the revelation, the apocalypse, is a apocatastasis. It's a restoration of God's original world. But I'll have to check that to be sure. So it's not unlike, hopefully it's not unlike what I just said, that the earth image is that this, oh, here is a fundamental truth, here is a fundamental truth, here is a fundamental truth. It's an attempt to portray a sense of returning to fundamental truths about oneself. We can easily recognize the earth as the anima wisdom figure of the earlier chapters. But now she is purified and spiritualized. Well, that's going to be just one of the meanings of earth. That's where I find it a little confusing. Psychologically considered, the parable is a description of the stage which Dorn calls the production of the Unus Mundus. Now, that's part of it, but there are many other things too. So I don't let yourself be limited by sentences like that. Because we'll see later, she says exactly that this is a unio corporalis. we'll get to it. So, and the way I resolved it is that she was saying that these things are many different things, many different dimensions of the experience are fundamentally real. In other words, are ground. Here it is sufficient to say that after the self has been experienced as a divine center within the psyche, this experience expands into a feeling of oneness with the whole cosmos. Now, I take issue with that, I dare say. Because a unus mundus is more than a feeling of oneness. It is the reality of oneness. And this is certainly an earlier work compared to Number in Time. Remember, we talked about unus mundus and Number in Time. And there was never this sense that it was just a feeling of oneness, but that it was the reality of the similar structures between inside and outside converging.
Maybe it's because he wasn't actually accomplishing the goal of the vision.
That's a possibility.
So it was, could only be a feeling and not a true unity.
That could very well be, Carol. That's a nice way to look at it. The other thing that occurred to me is that she developed her understanding of the unus mundus between here and Number in Time. I don't know. In the commentary to the fourth parable, I skipped a little bit. Skip to the beginning of the next paragraph. In the commentary, to the fourth parable, that the earth was the fourth element, which was so difficult to fit into the alchemical trinity. That was the chapter on the Holy Spirit. See, that was all about spirit. In the meantime, a further alchemical operation has been performed. The fixatio. That was the house, making real. Fixing. No, making real is not quite right. Making stable. Which was the theme of the fifth parable, the house. This was the production of an unshakable inner core, the well-founded treasure house of the self. That was the house, right? The ego appearing only as a guest, that is a marginal phenomenon. The description of this interior stone was bound up with a vision of God. And it is psychologically possible that the vision, the Hieros Gamos, that is the sacred union of sun and moon, was itself the rock, that is an inalienable experience upon which the future of man is founded. So that might be another way to think of Earth. It's the dimension of this experience as founding the new identity. But this rock or new world is not just an inner reality which adds itself to the old world, it is total reality. Therefore, the author tries in the present chapter to describe this totality and ultimate reality, which is the substrate of his experience.
Okay, can I back up for a little second?
Yeah.
Kind of going back to the fifth, the treasure house. How is that showing up? Because is that where we're reaching a point with like the stable core? Is that what they're saying? Okay. And he did not achieve that, but that would be part of the progression as far as somebody integrating.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And how does that look at me as far as stabilizing? Are you talking about like the ego or the...
Yes, the ego is stabilized.
The ego is stabilized strong enough to bear or to handle the rest.
To no longer flip between conflicting emotional states of mind and denying the existence of those two states defensively.
And then the one we're getting into now is talking about the uniting of all this within the body, actually living it and experiencing it in many different ways.
Well, I think that it's doing a bunch of different things. It's on one level, it's anticipating this business of the unus mundus, and that's, it is total reality. So it's not just your inner world that changes, it's the outer world. In a sense that a synchronistic moment is an event in the outer world. But as we'll see, there are so many different ways this is described that I don't want to get pinned down to just one understanding of it, because it's described as just about everything. And so the way I tried to reconcile this point of view is to say that the earth represents the foundation of your life, and at every point in the experience it feels like, oh, this is my foundation. Oh, this is my foundation. Anywhere from the earth as the unconscious to the earth as the unus mundus.
So it's kind of not putting the earth into any kind of box, but it's kind of allowing it to be and experience it as it forms?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
it's,
very cool.
It's highly symbolic thinking. And the art of working with material like this is being able to entertain two different thoughts at the same time about the same thing, which is not easy if you have a linear training. But if you can think in a dream, you can be in Paris and Rome at the same time, and it does not seem strange. I remember speaking of Joseph Campbell, I think he talked about being among the... would be the Sioux in South Dakota, and the fellow he was talking to said, well, yeah, this rock is the center of the world, but it's also a rock. You see, that level of symbolic thinking is comfortable with this, and that's, I think, the way you have to approach this chapter, that the earth is many different things. And she's going to keep saying many different things, and she never stops to say, I've just said it's 10 different things. Which is it? Because it's all of them. Although I did try to find where she said it's also, and paradox of it is at the same time.
Isn't that sort of the key, though, is that to be able to hold those the multiplicity of ways, the 10,000 one things, without picking and choosing or favoring or labeling any of them positive or negative or good or evil, just to hold them?
Again, let me just try one more example. Maybe it's clear, but let me just say it anyway. Imagine you're just starting analytic work, and the first time you understand a dream and you realize it makes a difference, you say, holy smokes, this is the most important thing in the world. Because it's a new understanding that seems to change everything. First time you have a synchronicity, you think, holy smokes, this is the most amazing thing in the world. It changes everything. So that's what I think is being communicated, this sense of discovering various aspects of this experience and saying, this is totally new, or this is the ground of a new lifestyle, this is the ground of a new lifestyle. Ultimately, though, the big picture is that the unus mundus, this idea that the inner world and the outer world are the same, encompasses them all.
Kind of the beauty of that, too, is you can't figure it out with your head. You have to experience with the heart.
Yeah.
With the heart, definitely the language of the heart. You know what I mean? Going into the symbol. You can't figure it out as much.
Okay. 340. He is that of the earth. Of the earth he speaketh. He that cometh from heaven is above all. Now here also is the earth represented as the principle of the elements. But the heavens stand for the three higher principles. Wherefore a little ought to be said of earth and heaven, for earth is the principle and the mother of the other elements. Who's he? Well, she makes reference to this text, which I photocopied and I'll pass around because it's not very long. I hope I have to think about it. Oh, we need one more over there.
Sorry. Is she talking here in this last paragraph? This was before?
That's the vision speaking.
That's vision?
Yeah.
Is this all they have of the quote from the Emerald Tablet?
I think so.
That's all I've ever been able to find. Mm-hmm. That can't be the whole thing.
I think that's all. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Maybe I could look off your screen just to read it. This is... Here, you can follow up. This came from about the 3rd century A.D. And it's what's called Hellenistic alchemy. Does that make sense? Alchemy from the... Greco-Egyptian period.
AD.
And you see it referred to a lot. So I figured let's just spend about 5 minutes on it because she is referred to it as the source of this text. And it's got all sorts of lore. We won't have to worry about that. Just so you can hear the text. Some of it you will recognize immediately of psychological importance. Some of it's a little obscure. I just found this on the internet. True without error, certain and most true, that which above is as that which is below. That I'm sure you've all come across one time or other. And that which is below is that which is above to perform the miracles of the one thing. The way Jung takes that is, that's synchronicity. And as all things were from one, by the meditation of one, so from this one thing come all things by adaptation. Its father is the sun, its mother is the moon, the wind carried it in its belly, the nurse thereof is the earth. Obviously, in our understanding, the image of the unconscious self. It is the father of all perfection in the consummation of the whole earth world. Its power is integral if it be turned to earth. Now comes our relevant part. Thou shalt separate the earth from the fire, the subtle from the coarse, gently without much ingenuity. It ascends from earth to heaven and descends again to earth and receives the power of the superiors and the inferiors. You see, here you've got this idea of this element coming from the heaven, and that's why she says, she refers to this text, Tabula, I'm not even sure how you pronounce it. Do you know how to pronounce that, Tom? Smaragdina? 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 It means Emerald Tablet of Hermes. Tabula is tablet. Smaragdina is emerald, and then of Hermes. So she quotes this text to say that what is being talked about here is the lapis, because that's what's talked about in the text.
Now, how are you connecting text with this?
In the text, he that cometh from heaven is above all. Here, it ascends from earth to heaven and descends again to earth. And receives the power of the superiors and the inferiors.
Hermes was the only god that connected among all three elements. He's the only god that could go from heaven to earth to hell with impunity. So, he's a perfect image for this.
Yeah.
because he was the uniter of all.
Right. And so Hermes then in medieval alchemy would become Mercurius. Mm-hmm. Mercurius is the beginning, the middle, and the end, and the way between. Another one of these Jungian, everything is everything.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to surrender to it. but that's the point of linking up this text. And you get a sense in here how you see that the it or the he here, I'm not sure about the translation, whether it could be he in Greek or not. But it is produced by a separation and a union, you see. So it's, and then it rises and falls, so that it's the lapis. I'll just read the rest just for the sake of it. Thus thou hast the glory of the whole world. Therefore let all obscurity flee before thee. This is the strong fortitude of all fortitude, overcoming every subtle and penetrating every solid thing. Thus the world was created. Hence are all wonderful adaptations of which this is the manner. Therefore I am called Hermes, the thrice great, having the three parts of the philosophy of the whole world that is finished, which I have to say concerning the operation of the sun. It's a beautiful text, don't you think, for what, being 1700 years old?
It's a printed version of what was probably an oral tradition anyway. It's probably the oldest one that we can get.
Mm-hmm. And I think Jung calls it the earliest alchemical text. If it's not the earliest, it's one of the earliest.
What AD did you say it was?
I think it's about 300 AD. Is that some?
That, yeah, as far as the sort of the print version.
Oh.
Oh, the print.
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
300
AD, not
3rd
century.
Well, 300.
200.
Ingenuity.
Ingenuity, yeah, there you go. 3rd, yeah, 3rd century would be, I think. Yes, that would be 300. The 3rd century. And I thought that's what you said, the 3rd century, not
380.
300 AD. I've been living so long in BC now, I've got to...
Well, 3rd century AD literally means 200 to 300.
Right, okay.
That's AD.
Right, see.
Yeah, I think, just think of it more as Hellenistic.
Well, but that's...
Early Hellenistic.
Late Hellenistic.
Is that late Hellenistic? Think of it as late Hellenistic.
Maybe it's Constantine.
When was Constantine?
That's 300.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
House of Lycia.
Right.
Around that time. This was a competing worldview with what became the Christian
world. Okay.
All right. I just think it's fascinating. That old and... So the Arabs took it over to Arabia, well, to Arab world. Then we got it back
Thank
to the Crusades.
Because
we would have lost.
Would have been totally lost.
Yeah.
So. And not only that, they didn't just hold it, but they elaborated.
Mm-hmm. Did they?
Yes. Their understanding of science and mathematics and astronomy and fed into this tradition, which is what's so great. If you can just get these countries to understand it, there is a common
yeah. Here.
So the Judaic tradition fed into this, what became the Christian tradition fed into this, and it, wherever it has landed, culture has flourished, peace has flourished, learning, wisdom, it's a good thing.
Well, we just came back from Spain, Portugal, and a professor from the University of Malaga said that when the Inquisition occurred and they kicked out all the Moors and all the Jews, that took them back 400 years to
still
recover.
Absolutely.
Can you feel
that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They went to the Ottoman Empire, the Fertile Crescent in the Middle East and stuff, and settled there, and the wealth was moving on. And stuff flourished there. through some interpretation?
Well, as I mentioned, Juan Fraunces' last book is an interpretation of an Arabic alchemical text. Okay. It's just been privately printed. It might be something to tackle sometime, because I don't think she intended to do it for this reason, because it was done in the early 90s, probably, she wrote it. But you can see that she was, I think she felt moved to have her creative work touch on the Arabic issue, on the Muslim issue, because it's the work of a Muslim alchemist.
What's the name of it?
I think the English translation is the Mystery of the Enigma. I brought it along one or two times ago. I don't know whether it's any good. I haven't had a chance to read it. I'll read it this summer. But
Clearing of Enigma?
I think the Mystery.
Okay.
Oh, is it the Clearing?
I'm looking at what you said before. Clearing of Enigma.
I think it's the Mystery.
Introduction and Psychological Comment.
It could be the Clearing.
Mm.
Something with Mystery in there. Oh, no, Enigma. I mean, something with the Enigma in there.
Something with Enigma. Yeah.
But I just think it's very important to... At one time, we were not enemies, you know. It's amazing.
Gary,
yeah.
So on the fifth parallel here, where we were talking about like the third way showing up, correct? Is that in the fifth parable? Kind of that, you know, in the corporalis, we talked about creating our own, that third way coming from finding our third way, the expression that emerges from within us. So when Pendle was taking him.
Yeah.
Okay, so and this next chapter kind of talks about man is founded. Is that why we're kind of integrating into all these different things? This third way comes with something different?
A good way to put it.
Yeah.
Well, the way I put it is that this third way, no, it's not a third way.
Well, the new thing born, the child, isn't that the, what we're talking about?
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's right.
The problems of verbalized.
No, the third, yeah, the light of the sun and the moon was the goal of what we've achieved so far. The light from the union of the sun and the moon. And the reason this chapter is coming up is now the need is felt within the unconscious to make that possibility real. And what is a classic symbol of reality but the earth? So that's why we're dealing with earth symbolism. So, he that cometh from above is probably meant the filius philosophorum, which would be the light that we were talking about earlier. And after ascending to heaven, descends to the earth, thereby uniting in himself the upper and lower powers. Similarly, heaven and earth unite in our text. In heaven, there are three elements, fire, air, water. Earth forms the fourth. The unsolved problem of the fourth parable, the integration of the fourth element, is taken up again. On closer analysis, it is apparent that the earth described here is not simply the fourth element, which is added to the other three, but it possesses the character of mystical totality. This earth is the arche first principle in the sense intended by classical philosophy. Let me skip a sentence and then we'll look at that. This earth is really identical with wisdom, who in Proverbs 8:22 is, if not the mother, then at least God's helper at the work of creation. And that, Proverbs 8:22 runs, "The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was." So she's the earth in potential that existed before God created it, in the form that God used to make that potential real.
So it was earth in potential before God created it.
In Proverbs.
Proverbs. Okay.
The idea is that it says God created the earth, but if you look at Proverbs, it's fine-tuned a little bit, because there's an earth there that ever was before God created it. But it would have to be in potential. Because then in Genesis, that's the earth that God made real, is the idea. Does that make sense? And the arche we'll talk about in a second, is the form that God used to turn that potential into the real universe. Sophia is, wisdom is two things. Wisdom is the earth before creation. And wisdom is the form that God used to make that earth before creation the real universe.
Which completely flies in the face of Christian teaching.
Yeah.
Christian teaching says that
right.
The earth is before.
Right. If you take Genesis.
And so it's interesting, this whole idea now that there's this creation
right.
Now on how did earth get formed,
mm-hmm.
because it actually existed
mm-hmm.
in God,
mm-hmm.
before God. And then he developed form out of
right.
which is leading us to say it's all one.
Yeah,
and
remember, and Sophia, remember, is the form. Remember, we talked about that at the very beginning. Sophia is the plan. So the first thing that she is saying is that. The earth is wisdom. And the earth is wisdom is the arche. Arche is like archetype, the first form. Well, that's what we've talked about all along. Highly symbolic thinking here. Because it's like everything is everything again. But what I think we are trying to understand now is the import of this in the vision is that, you see, there's an attempt on the part of the unconscious, this is how I understand it anyway, there's an attempt on the part of the unconscious to bring the result of the struggle down to bedrock reality. Or you could say to bring wisdom back to herself, because the light was wisdom, the lapis philosophorum was wisdom, and the earth is wisdom. So it's wisdom coming back to wisdom. But what that means, again, not doesn't make linear sense, but what it means symbolically is there's an attempt on the part of the unconscious to consolidate this experience.
To live it.
To make it a living reality.
For living reality, here and now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to bring it down, concrete from heaven to earth, bring that vision. And we're the third or the vessel.
Right.
I would say even beyond that, to show that it's all one.
Correct.
Because I mean, it's really moving toward no separation.
Yeah.
That it's all one. I mean, that's a really powerful thing to think about back then. It's even hard to get our minds around that today, but back then, my God, that would have blown a few fuses in my brain to think about that. And that's
yeah.
very heretical. I mean, beyond heretical.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Theologically considered, yeah.
That goes back to so many stories where, you know, I mean, we have to go all this distance just to realize, you know, I mean, that it's all connected. I mean, we have to take all these different, like all these centuries or whatever, to come to the same place of oneness, or you know, that we're all, it's all connected and all part of the. You know, so you hear so many stories, you know, where they take off and they leave, and then they find out it was right there, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the beginning.
Well,
but it just takes us a while to understand, to comprehend that, to bring it into the
real. I think the church will sort of prolong this process too by dividing up.
They have a lot to lose.
Yeah, see, one of the effects is the whole world becomes the church.
Mm-hmm.
Would this be anything like a mirror image?
Keep going.
I don't.
Oh, no.
That's my question.
Give me more, Mary. a mirror image of?
Well, it was all there, only it wasn't.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Almost, yeah. Like a mirage, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the idea of Sophia, that she's there but not there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not there until you actualize it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what it means if you take this light from the sun and the moon in the previous parable and equate that with the lapis philosophorum, with the it in the emerald tablet, they're all the same. When that comes down to earth, it's coming down to the possibility of realization. Coming down to the possibility of putting that arche, that form, into reality. It's not really telling us anything new, but it's showing us how the unconscious works to try to consolidate an understanding.
The other thing that is so beautiful about this, if you look down to that footnote 5, there she is, as it were, the positive counterpart to Kiham.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Kiham is that creative chaos out of which the earth was formed, and it's considered to be feminine. It's a feminine flux, is the way to think about that. But it was seen as very negative and
dangerous
and dark and not to be thought of. Tiamat, of course, is the one who sent her brother, was it, to hell? She was the goddess, the Egyptian goddess. She was the devouring mother.
She's the devouring mother, all
right. Right. She was the devouring mother, and so, but not at first. At first, she was a goddess, the mother of all, and then she was transformed into a devouring mother. So, in both of those images, it shows this negative, dark feminine.
Yes.
So there's this now wisdom is coming up.
It's a complete flip.
Counterpart.
Mm-hmm. Which is true, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. So that's a nice way to look at it. Yeah, Tiamat is the one that Marduk vanquishes.
Yes.
In the Babylonian.
What? Well, I thought Tiamat was the dragon, the sea dragon.
Hmm?
From
The Tiamat slays. Marduk slays. Yeah, chops her up into pieces, yeah. Okay, so one way to think of the earth is that earth is wisdom. I'm trying to add some linearity here. Otherwise, I think we just come away babbling.
Isn't that what needs to be done in the personal process, too? When you're confronted with images that are confusing or conflicting, and you just try to make a linear narrative out of it?
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Yeah, because the unconscious really is its best expression, but we don't understand it. And our linear mind, which is where power lies to change things, to do things, it's in the linear mind, has to proceed linearly. So what I try to do is translate it into some sort of linear framework without doing violence to the phenomena, if at all possible. Because the phenomena are beautiful, but they have no power in them. Well, saying poetry has an emotional power, but the power to change behavior comes from the rational mind. And so we have this paradox in our work that we're dealing with images which are and should be nonlinear, but the linear mind is the one that has the power to change things. So you can say each dream interpretation is a little bit of violence to the image, but you try to do as little as possible. So what I thought would help if we could at least categorize the various things that she equates the earth to mean, realizing that that is imposing a structure, and where really it's not black and white, it's shades of gray. And that takes us to 3:42. I'm not sure we should start another thing. Wait, did we just do 3:42? No, we just did 3:40. We did 3:40, yeah.
That next line on
top
of 342 is really powerful.
Well, why don't you read that? Well, we have a little bit of time. Let's do that. Read that if you would, please, Nancy.
Thomas Aquinas attempted a symbolic interpretation of the passage in Genesis, and the earth was without form and void. It was the invisible, only potentially existent prima materia. this may shed light on the statement that earth is the first principle. It is materia in potentia, which receives its form from God. And he is struggling with something so incredible there. It's just amazing to me.
You want to try to put what that is in your own words?
Well, you know, there's, back then you could not think that anything existed before God. Mm-hmm. And so now all of a sudden this idea is coming that there was something with God. Mm. And in the presence of God, and it was, you know, to think about that was so heretical. You know, that must have been a source of real conflict for him. So he's trying to interpret it in his own way to stay within the Catholic, for the Christian framework.
Mm-hmm.
And he's struggling to do that mm-hmm. because he senses that something else was there at that same mm-hmm. time. And it was wisdom. It was life and potential. All possibilities.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one of the things I like the way she, well, I think she comes out and says it, but if she doesn't, she certainly implies it, that the reason Thomas got these visions is because he was such, had such a conscience. There was a man who stayed true as best he could to the original understanding with all conscientiousness. And so that's why the self gave him another vision, because it knew he was the sort of person who would stay true to things. And then you can see the struggle, which has become our struggle.
Just saying too, Nancy, kind of going on what you're talking about, I think it does say though that in the very beginning of Genesis where it talks about God, so then we created man in our image. So there is that there was something with God or whatever, Father, but we've always not, I think, recognized it as Mother or Sophia or, you know, I mean, the female, you know, feminine or whatever. I think that's where...
Well, Genesis is form without void. Void without form.
And remember, it's not procreative. Right. It's just simply creative. It's masculine creative. There's no procreation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a singular form out of which this is coming. And he's showing there's something else.
That's kind of interesting when you think about it. That God had to be, you know what I mean? The to birth or whatever. I mean, you're talking about the feminine.
Well, he certainly has in Proverbs his consort, and she's the form. She's what existed before, and she's the form that he used.
And that's Sophia.
And that's Sophia, which is, if you take it internally, it's our a priori identity. It's all, hopefully you've heard this. Well, it's 2:30. We got as far as 3:42. Not easy material. We at least got through 5 pages, and I don't think we'll get through the chapter next time. But if you probably have read most of it or close to most of it, finish chapter 11. We'll see how far we get.